Did you know the Texarkana Gazette has a newsletter for every interest? Sign up at texarkanagazette.com/newsletters to get the news you care about most delivered straight to your email box. You can find out what's happening this weekend, read the week's best feature stories, or catch up on sports scores. Try The Upside, our roundup of good news sure to put a positive spin on your week. There's even an on-the-line newsletter, so you can be sure to never miss the latest episode. And more. Visit texarkanagazette.com/newsletters to customize how you get news today. That's texarkanagazette.com/newsletters. Hello and welcome to On the Line. I'm Carl Richter. Thanks to three prominent exhibitions in the past 9 years, sculptor George Tobolowsky has become synonymous with public art in Texarkana. You've probably seen at least one of his pieces, metal sculptures made of objects found in scrapyards and industrial sites. This week, he installed four new sculptures in Texarkana for an exhibition called Bending the Rules 3. While he was in town, he stopped by the studio to talk about his work, his process, and his relationship with the Twin Cities. Here's my conversation with George Tobolowsky. Joining me in the studio is George Tobolowsky, a sculptor who has a new exhibition opening in Texarkana today. You've been out installing some pieces, correct?
Correct. We are refreshing Bending the Rules 2 to Bending the Rules 3 by bringing in at least five new sculpture pieces around town and at the universities. And just got through installing. It was a great day. We had to actually change the date twice because of the ice storms recently.
Right. We're recording this on Wednesday, which is a beautiful day.
And it's great to have my first exhibition in Texarkana was in 2013 at the Art Center.
Yeah.
And the relationship and the people here in Texarkana have been great, and this is my third exhibition here.
And the current exhibition is being funded by a grant, is that right?
Funded by a grant from the Texas Commission on the Arts as part of the granting, and just through my ability to get pieces and move them around, and and the city of Texarkana actually do the installation, which is part of the expensive part.
Okay. And people may have seen these sculptures around town. There have been a couple at both city halls. There's one the city owns permanently at Spring Lake Park. There has been one in the roundabout on Pavilion that I understand you removed today. But what you do is take, quote unquote, found objects. And what's the technique? Do you weld them together? How does it work?
Well, basically, I graduated SMU back in the early 70s with a accounting, sculpting, and law degree. And all during that process, I was always a found objects guy. I always enjoyed going to scrap yards, fabrication plants, and picking up metal. I did that during college. And then after college, I actually, after law school, practiced law for 30 years and business in that period, and then got back in 2004 back into the art world along with doing business at the same time. So my process is to go to a scrapyard, and I'm fortunate enough had access to just some of the great scrapyards in Dallas. And if I picked up a ton of stainless steel or steel every other week, I have a studio where I sort through it, and then I assemble my pieces, and they're all welded together. I deal with steel and stainless steel only, very little copper over the years. Welding sculptures really started back in the 30s with a sculptor by the name of David Smith.
Okay.
And then just extended on up.
Is that he American?
American?
Yeah.
Yes. It was a creation of a new art form, welding pieces of metal together to make art. And my pieces, the pieces in Texarkana, actually range from, they're pretty good heavy size pieces, from anywhere from about 1,500 pounds to about 3,000 pounds.
Wow. So how do you move them around? Is it, you have a crane, I assume?
Well, at the studio, we have what's called a bobcat.
Right.
And the bobcat will, its limitations about 5,000 pounds. So I have made pieces bigger than that, but we need a bobcat and the tractor at the same time.
Yeah.
But most of them, 99%, we move around with the bobcat. And here in Texarkana, they had to rent a Skytrak to move these pieces around.
And what is that?
Skytrak is just a kind of like a big forklift, but it telescopes out.
Okay, I got you.
You see them at all the construction sites.
Right, I got you.
And they will lift up to 6,000 or 8,000 pounds because when you telescope out it, it takes away their the leverage on it.
How do you transport multiple sculptures at a time?
Well, this today we actually loaded up four pieces at the studio yesterday. They probably weighed about 10,000 pounds totally on a back of a gooseneck trailer and brought them into town.
Wow.
And unloaded them today.
There are some color elements in these sculptures. Do you paint them or do you find the pieces the color they are?
Well, as part of my found object desire is to preserve the history of the metal.
Okay.
So if the metal has a stamping on it, like a number from the forge, or if it has some original color on it from when a fabricator was actually producing bolts or nuts out of this long rod, they'll paint the end of the rods a certain color. So I preserved those colors. Now, over the last several years, I have actually painted some big found object pieces. One of my other mentors, two mentors, one was James Searles at SMU, who's gone on to be one of America's greatest sculptors, and a lady by the name of Louise Nevelson from the 70s and 80s, who was a found object sculptor that used wood and made these enormous wooden boxes. And she would paint her boxes either all black, all white, maybe some gold boxes. But to me, that kind of took away from each found object and its relationship to the other found object. She, what I had learned from people, from my mentors, is really the object of making found object art is to make sure there is a relationship between one found object and the other.
So these aren't just randomly thrown together at all.
No. You got to really kind of take each object and make sure, in my mind, it looks correct. It leaves some negative spaces, and they're not overwhelming. One doesn't overwhelm another, so there's a good relationship between them.
Your sculptures, at least in my eyes, seem to have sort of a combination of abstract forms and more recognizable forms. I know a lot of these sort of found object pieces by other artists are an attempt to sort of replicate more realistic objects in that you might see out there. How do you approach that? Are you trying to make these things look like something else, or are they purely abstract?
A little bit of both. What I do is when I build it, I will start with a great piece of metal in my mind, and then I build on that. And at the end of the day, I photograph it, go home, and it automatically downloads my iPad. And I can see if I messed up and put one piece in the wrong place or something doesn't look right.
Yeah.
I can adjust it. So then I can start weaving whether I want it to be something that looks like something or just pure random abstract expressionism.
Right.
And once that's done, my studio's an hour away from home, so I have an hour out and an hour back. And so as I think about what I'm going to do going up, I think about what I've done and also what kind of name I want to place on the piece.
Yeah.
And a lot of my names kind of give an insight into what I'm trying to accomplish with that found object
frame
piece.
So to speak. How do you revise? I mean, once you've welded something together, can you then take it apart? I mean, I imagine this has to be a very deliberate process because you're making permanent changes to these huge objects.
Well, that's when we weld them on. A lot of times if I say I'm kind of questionable on that piece, I'll say, don't fully weld it.
Mm.
But even if it's fully welded on, we come in, we'll torch it off.
Yeah.
We can saw it off, depending on the size of the weld, and grind it up again, grind up the weld and clean it up. And hopefully, and we've never had a problem removing a piece or moving a piece maybe even 3 or 4 inches over makes a big difference in the piece.
Yeah. You're saying we, do you have assistants, students?
I have a gentleman who's a professional welder who works with me, Joe Miller, for last 30 years on other projects, but in the art world too. And a couple other guys that are neighbors that come over that are good welders and strong enough to help me move a lot of these pieces around.
Yeah. So tell people where you have pieces. They're all over the world, correct? You've done hundreds.
Probably done about 600 pieces, 600, almost 700 now.
Just in the past 17 years?
Yes.
Wow.
Really, with found objects, and if you have enough objects, the typical artist, sculptor, if he's manufacturing some pieces to weld together, or if he's a professor at a university, you know, the professor might knock out 2 or 3 pieces a year. Mm-hmm. Professional sculptor that's creating a lot of found objects or objects to be welded together might make 10 pieces. I make somewhere between 30 and 40 pieces a year.
Wow.
And at least 10 of those are usually given to charities for fundraisers and stuff. So I make a lot of art. You asked where some of my pieces over the last 7 years or so, I've been asked to make some ceremonial religious pieces of which I've made found object menorahs.
Oh, wow.
And menorahs and Hanukkah menorahs are located anywhere from the Library of Congress, Duke University, University of Texas. There's quite a few synagogues.
I would imagine these are large scale.
Some are large, some are small.
Okay.
I'm dealing on a very interesting menorah right now with West Point.
Oh, interesting.
It's made out of a bomb.
Oh,
wow. Actually get bombs out of the scrap yards.
That's, so, that bears a lot of symbolic weight.
There is a lot of weight there. Other pieces, other sculpture pieces are probably in 30 or 40 museums. Some pieces are in Israel. Some are in, I had a show in New Delhi, India. They have a piece there at the Royal Academy. You're just lucky enough. A lot of my pieces are mostly in Texas or Southwest. Mm-hmm. Old Miss, I had a great show at Old Miss in Oxford, and they have 3 of my pieces on campus. So wherever you have shows, you try to leave a little bit of artwork there.
So tell me a little bit more about your relationship with Texarkana. You said it started back in 2013.
The Regional Arts Center here. It goes back with the gentleman, one of our best family friends, Gary Cusin, is from Texarkana, lives in Dallas, and we've been friends and wives have been great friends for the last 40 years. He's from Texarkana. He got me in touch with a guy named Brian and over at the Regional Arts Center, who's just retired and had a show.
Yeah.
A regional, a really great show of about 40 pieces. And then David Orr, I was lucky enough to meet David Orr when we were installing the outdoor pieces around the city.
Mm-hmm.
And that friendship with David Orr has led to two additional shows called Bending the Rules, because in front of the Texarkana Museum Art Center was a piece called Bending the Rules.
Okay.
So we've had Bending the Rules 2. I guess Bending the Rules 1 was at the Regional Center. They've been maybe 12 pieces around the city.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually, in front of City Hall, the city acquired one piece. And there's another piece in a park.
Yeah.
And now, just what I'm up here today is reinstalling, refreshing Bending the Rules 2 into Bending the Rules 3.
Okay. So there are new pieces now in front of the Pro Theater.
Yes.
At the Arts Park. And where else? Where
a couple of others? Over at the City of Texarkana, City Hall in Arkansas.
Right, right.
Texas A&M, we just put another piece out there.
Okay.
Refreshed the piece in front of the Regional Arts Center.
Mm-hmm.
In front of the fire station.
Oh, right, yeah. David mentioned that a minute ago when he was introducing us, the Central Fire Station downtown by the library.
That's a very special piece. it's called Fighting Your Fires.
Mm-hmm.
That actually concept came out of the City of West when it blew up.
Oh, yeah, I remember
and
that.
I was fortunate enough to meet the mayor and visit with a lot of the people that were affected by that explosion and see all the different destruction, the amount of destructions to the different pieces of equipment was there.
If people don't remember, there was an ammonium nitrate fertilizer plant there that exploded, causing catastrophic damage
Several, I mean, maybe 10 or 12 first responders died at the scene.
Yeah.
So I was asked to come up with concepts, and eventually, you know, a lot of projects never get off the ground. That one, I was working on a piece that never got off the ground, but I went ahead and made it anyway, and it's a great piece, and it's in front of your downtown fire station. Right now, we installed that today.
Great. What do you think is the importance of public art like this?
Well, for an artist like myself, starting out, whether you're new, whether you're young or old, regional art centers are really the backbone of the art world for artists.
Mm-hmm.
That's where you get starts. That's where you get your first exhibition in a gallery. That's where you get to understand how to become an artist and how to become a deal with directors and city people.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I enjoy those relationships as much as you can do. I've had shows in McAllen, in Albany, in Abilene, in Tyler, in San Angelo. Just all in San Antonio, you know, just mostly a lot of good Texas, smaller towns and large towns. So it's good to get those relationships completed.
Yeah. Outdoor art, maybe the one chance people get to see some. I mean, a lot of people won't go to the museum or to the exhibition. Is that part of what your motivation is just to sort of get that art out in front of people?
the more art you get out there in the outside of this downtown city area, sure. Mm-hmm. It's to get them and to talk to them. You get a good chance when you're in these towns, like especially like Texarkana, to say, you know, I'd like to give a talk like I'm doing today, and or actually talk at the art center and maybe help motivate some of these younger art students that are coming online.
Well, that's great. I understand that you're going to be working on some pieces with metal found in the Hotel Grimm. Is that correct?
That is right. David Orr asked me to come to Texarkana and to go through the old Grimm Hotel before we completely gut it and label some of the found objects you want.
Yeah.
That was a chore, crawling through the basement of the old hotel where you think you're going to get bit by a pretty nasty spider or something. You didn't know what was down there with a flashlight.
It used to be a herd of feral cats.
Yeah, well, it was a little scary, but I pulled out probably 20 really large found objects and motors and fans and stuff that probably weigh about 2,000 or 3,000 pounds. Wow. And they're at the studio, and I'm in the process of starting to clean them and start to envision assembling two pieces that will go by the front door.
Okay, great.
On each side of the front door to Grimm. I think that actually David was able to get funding, some additional funding from the Texas Commission on the Arts for that too.
Great. So what sort of things did you find down there? You mentioned a motor.
Well, there's some elevator motors. There's fan motors. There's some big fan blades. A lot of valves.
There's a big boiler down there.
Yeah, the boiler like I didn't get out. Yeah. I got parts of it, but not all of it.
Yeah.
I like boilers. They have what are called tank heads on the end of each boiler. But I think those were pretty rotted out that I saw down there.
I think they're... decided to just leave one down there.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Has to.
It was scary down there.
Yeah, it's come a long way.
Hopefully. Oh, it looks great.
Yeah, I'm going to get a tour sometime soon, I hope.
Yeah.
So what else do you have going on?
Got a major show in Dallas with my mentor, James Searles, coming up.
Where will that be?
It opens April the 20th. At the National Center for Jewish Art, right across from North Park. Mm-hmm. And it will probably hit the road. It'll probably go to different locations. I was supposed to be in 17 and 19, I was in Jerusalem for the Jerusalem Biennale. And Jerusalem Biennale 21 got canceled. Probably be back. I was in Venice for the Venice Biennale in 18 and 19, skip 20, and skipping 21, probably go back next year again. Been invited to, you know, you work on 3 or 4 exhibitions, and some come through and some don't.
But, right. But doesn't sound like you're slowing down at all.
No, it's always fun to make art, and it's always good to have exhibitions, whether it's a one-piece exhibition. Like in Salina, Kansas, I've got a piece sitting up there, and I've got pieces around the state in exhibitions, and just keep on moving art around.
There you go. When will you be back in town?
I am guessing definitely be back when I bring the two pieces for the Grimm. Mm-hmm. And that could be around May for sure.
Okay.
And then I've had a relationship down at Texas A&M, down at College Station, had a major show there, and I'd love to bring a show to the A&M campus here also.
Well, we'll be looking for it, and looking forward to the unveiling of those two new pieces just for us.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Please stay in touch, and good luck.
Okay.
Don't drop anything on your toe.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you.
Take care.
Adios.
Thank you. On the Line is a Texarkana Gazette podcast recorded in Star Bear Studio, right here in downtown Texarkana, USA. The show was written, produced, and edited by Carl Richter. News stories are based on Gazette staff reports. Texarkana Gazette podcasts are made possible in part by a grant from the Google News Initiative Journalism Emergency Relief Fund. I'll see you next week on the line.